For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Welcome. My name is Doug Patch. I'm the Division Coordinator for Adult Ministries here at Xenos. Adult Ministries is our collection of post-college home groups, of which we have 146 right now, about 2,400 people in them. And we have them broken up into groupings that we call spheres, seven spheres, six of which meet here on main campus in our central teachings. And our home groups attend the same central teaching every week, so relationships are built. And we also have one sphere that meets on the west side. That's a cooperative ministry with Youth for Christ. I'm also a home group leader by God's grace, and I have been for 19 and a half years, and I've had the pleasure of seeing six or seven groups grow and plant. God has surrounded me with fantastic co-leaders, surrounded me with fantastic workers in the home groups. And so I don't know exactly how he does it, but year after year, and now decade after decade, I see him really leading evangelism in the home groups that that we have. I also do some home group oversight. I've been doing that since 1988 as a consultant to help other home groups with their mission as well. So for me, being a home group leader is one of the most exciting things that I do. I feel like it enables me to embrace what is closest to God's heart, reaching the lost and discipling the saved. And really, here at Xenos, that is what every home group's mission is. And I realize that may not be the case in the church that you're from. Your home groups may have different missions, different purpose, but here, all of them have that particular purpose. It's where the essence of the work gets done in our church. So just to take a moment before we get into what it looks like to try to lead evangelism in a home group, I'd like to just make sure we're on the same page as to what home group life looks like here. And I'm going to just give kind of a typical range. It can vary. We have a lot of freedom and flexibility, both in what we teach as well as how we structure our home groups from home group to home group. So this is just more or less typical. The Smith home group, and now there actually is a Smith home group, but meets every other Tuesday. Every other week, post-college groups are more common. It's a mixture of Christians and non-Christians on any given week. Probably 10% or so of the people will be non-Christians there. Usually things get started around 7:30 and go to 11-ish, about 30 minutes of Bible discussion or teaching that is seeker-attractive as well as Christian-challenging, and 15 minutes of questions and sharing afterward, a little bit of corporate prayer, and we hang out for a few hours. And we'll talk a little bit more about what that looks like toward the end. We also have an every week central teaching. So the clusters of home groups attended either the main campus or west side. West side was planted recently and is the smallest sphere with 120, and we'll get up to 600 or so at the other spheres, the central teaching. And so again, that meeting is a mixture of Christians and non-Christians, about a 50-minute teaching, questions and sharing afterward. We pass microphones around, and corporate prayer the same way, and then we have fellowship afterward. You can tell from the look of the cafe, the atrium, the deck. You know, we've got a 10-foot-long grill out there that cooks for everybody, and we do everything that we can to make it not a Sunday go-to-meeting mentality, but even though we have many Sunday meetings, that now is the time to really engage one another in relationships afterward. And we do that weekly. And again, like I said, you know, most of the home group, each home group will attend the same central teaching. We don't mandate it, but we certainly do try to persuade the people in our home group. You know, it's hardly normative involvement in the body of Christ if we're only seeing each other every other week at home group. If we're also seeing each other every week at the large meeting here, oh, now we're starting to click on the kind of cylinders Paul's talking about in 1 Corinthians 12 and Romans 12 and other passages about New Testament fellowship. Some home groups also have a monthly or biweekly meeting that is believer only for equipping purposes. Some have them, some don't. Some do it as a collection of all the Christians in the group, and some break it out same sex. And again, their flexibility as to whether they want to include that in their structure or not. What's more essential here, and why we do and how we do evangelism through home groups, is this. Non-meeting oriented structure, I hate to call it structure because it's really not, but it's core to the ethos of evangelism here. Weekly discipleship with one or more people, and we'll get into the connection with evangelism there. So these get-togethers are going on out there. I've got guys coming over to the house at 6:30 in the morning on Tuesday. I meet with another one at 6 on Friday. I'm out 3 mornings a week before going to work, as are they, in discipling relationships. Also non-meeting oriented, hopefully weekly time with non-Christians, both spontaneous as opportunities come up, as well as planned, inviting people out you have relationships with through, you know, the soccer team and, you know, the neighborhood and things of that nature. So, and we're going to dig into that area much more deeply in a moment. But that's what the life would look like typically of somebody in a home group that would be actively pursuing the Lord's work in evangelism. The vast majority of our outreach in this church is from relationships anywhere from cool to warm, somebody you've almost just met and barely have a hello to somebody you've known longer, invited by and hopefully led to Christ by home group members. So almost all of our outreach is done in the context of home group members doing outreach. Now, they may bring them to a home group. They may bring them to a central teaching. They're going to probably just kind of read where that person's at, whether they rather kind of disappear in a large crowd or whether that would be intimidating and they'd rather be in a smaller, more friendly environment like a home group. In 2005, we had over 2,000 first-time guests to 108 home groups. We had 108 when the year ended. We're up to 146 now. That's why that number is different. And so we were incredibly pleased with that. We are very grateful to God because the year before, He had really challenged us that we had lost a lot of our fire for evangelism. And in 2004, we repented corporately, really, and saw an incredible surge in evangelism in 2004. So we figured 2005, boy, if we could just hold our own, we would be just grateful for that. And instead, He even grew us further as far as evangelism ministry goes. And by far, the vast majority of our first-time guests are non-Christians. We not only discourage, we actively do not pursue Christians who are already involved in a Bible-believing church. We are friends with the churches around here. A lot of cooperation. We aren't into sheep stealing. So, okay. Let's get into then the issue of leading evangelism. And again, to make sure we're kind of hearing it the same way, I've made up a definition. Influencing other Christians to willingly and actively participate in personal evangelism motivated by God's grace. As we look at this today, I'm not going to be looking at the broader role of leading a home church. I'm really just focusing on what it takes on our end, man's role, to help build this in a home group. And frankly, even though I've been doing it 19 and a half years, I think I'm more clueless every year that goes on. I have seen, you know, outreach come in through the door. I barely recognize the home group I sit in front of because there's 9 first-time guests sitting there, and I think I'm in the wrong place, but it's my basement, so that couldn't be the case. And I try to figure out, what did we do? I don't know. And then other times there seems to be a dearth of outreach, and the same thing. What are we doing wrong? Well, I don't know. All we do is keep our hand on the plow, We try to do what it is the Lord puts in front of us, and some of that's reflected today. So I don't want to appear like the guru, because I'm less certain about how God works in this way 19 plus years into this. So this is the way I see leading evangelism in home groups and the way we picture it. It is not a couple of things, though. It is not administrating outreach events and hoping cold relationships just come to the event, and that is evangelism. And it's not the extension of that that is often the case, where we just try to encourage the members of the church to bring their people, bring their guests, and we'll win them from the pulpit. Not the case. We want them to do it, as well as ourselves, and we'll talk about that as well. I'm certain every one of us here would want to see our Christian home group members actively investing in the lost, in their family and community. I'm sure every one of us would want to see them broaching spiritual conversations, showing the love of God, and witnessing, and inviting them to fellowship, where the mystical witness of the body just tunes the message all that much more clearly. So that's the goal. That's the way we look at leading evangelism. But what generates this? What keeps it going, even if you do get a spurt? Well, let's look very briefly at a master evangelist ministry to find the answer. Well, that's not anything. Oh. Okay. Consider Paul's three missionary journeys, consider his imprisonments, and the evangelism work he did there. How many people did he lead personally to Christ? I don't know, but like Joe was talking about last night, you're talking about Caesar's household. It was an incredible run of evangelism he had while he was on earth. It must have just been just constantly vibrating, but it must have been like daily he was in these kind of conversations. But then, too, you look at something like here in 2 Timothy 2:2, where you see four generations of discipleship pictured. Hey, Tim, the things which you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who, by the way, will also be able to teach others. Four generations of discipleship. And when you read the epistles of Paul, you realize he's constantly surrounded by colleagues. He's constantly, you know, greeting them and counseling them via letters, etc. He was always surrounded by people that were Christians and growing. How did that happen? Well, it happened through discipleship. See, this was the life of Paul and the life we are called to. Initiating relationship with non-Christians and leading them to Christ, discipling young Christians from the start, developing their evangelism and eventual discipleship ministries. And then they do the same, and they do the same, and they do the same. And so to dichotomize between discipleship ministry and evangelism is a dichotomy God does not understand. The Great Commission, as Paul saw, the Great Commission is lived out by both. It's like a dovetailed joint in woodworking. It takes both pieces to make a strong joint, and it is a strong joint. So discipleship is the engine that drives evangelism. So here's how we often, and we'll get into a ministry chart a little bit more. This is one of the few tools that I want to show. We use just some program embedded in Word or whatever to show discipling relationships in a home group. And you see, even in some cases, we've got some 2 Timothy 2:2 kind of lineage going on here. This is partly made up and partly whatever I cut and paste. You know, how did these people even get arranged this way? Oh, well, very naturally. Very naturally, Andy led Gary to Christ. So naturally, he would then disciple and encourage Gary to begin his own ministry, which he did as well. and so on and so forth. So the picture is a very natural, relational one. And of course, if you kind of look behind the scenes, everybody there are evangelists. We don't use those symbols. I'm just doing it for illustration here. And many are disciples. These people are, they're the lost that are coming to home group. They're being reached out to. And so that's kind of the picture of everybody mobilized, everybody with God's vision for them. So let's dig in then on some principles of leading evangelism in home groups. First of all, home group leaders must win the home group to God's perspective of the mission of the church. Now, if God is right here in Ephesians 4:16, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think he is. He sees the growth of the body occurring according to the proper working of each individual part. It is critical. No leader is good enough, or leadership team, we usually work in teams here, is good enough that they're going to grow a home group by their own personal evangelism efforts. It takes the vision that God has given for the church according to the proper working of each individual part. And so that's part of my role as a home group leader, is to convince the Christians in our home group that that's what we're about. That's what this group exists for. And so they're really, what is key is us building this kind of consensus where the majority of the people own God's purpose for the church. The majority of believers in our home group, if you ask them, frankly, probably all of them, I can't think of any that wouldn't know this, that what they are about is reaching the lost and discipling the saved. And that's what our group is focused on. So what's our role in helping members acquire God's purpose? Well, there's no formula. This is not a formula about building this kind of consensus. It's highly relational. It is about, as that passage began, speaking the truth in love to each member of the body. And I'm only mentioning a couple of ways we build consensus. It's much more complex than this. We're going to just look briefly at, we do it through teaching God's perspective on two issues and giving feedback on how the church is doing. These two parts are very, very critical. So we teach God's perspective, that God's purpose for the church is to reach the lost and disciple the saved. We let the power of the Word of God come alongside as the Spirit in them is to see this is what we're here for. This is what the church does. A church that is not reaching the lost and discipling the saved is not living out God's purpose. And so we draw them to scriptures, we corporately as well as individually, and we build God's case for this, that every Christian should be involved in this ministry, one by one, relationship by relationship. This is covered in the life of a home group. And this includes, as we'll see, the pastors. But we're going to save that for a specific one, a specific principle. Also, key teaching point is that people will need to come to grips with 1 John 2:15 and 16. Worldly values in accomplishing God's purpose do not work together very well. You know, every Christian comes into God's kingdom with our worldly set of values, our priorities, our goals, what we think we want to do with our life. And so often, God says, I've got a different plan for your life. If you become the best at that, it will have to be at sacrifice of my purpose in your life. I want you to exchange your agenda for mine. And so without getting into a teaching on 1 John 2, he highlights three aspects of the world system that really can gut a Christian's witness. And so oftentimes we not only teach to this, but this is part of our discipling relationship as well, is challenging this. Now, you have in your handout a little slide. It's actually my desktop slide. When my wife and I were in Williamsburg last year, I took a picture of a tombstone that nobody was buried at. It just gave a list of all of the kind of sufferings that the signers of the Declaration of Independence went through, as well as their families. And that's actually written out there on the left, because it's hard to read on the slide. And then to the right, I have written on my screen what you see there. We're incredibly grateful for what they have done. And it certainly is worth our esteem. But they were called to a lesser purpose than you and I. See, we have a category for sacrifice for a greater cause. We look at what those people did. Just reading that alone is stunning. I love reading history and the things these people went through. It's unbelievable for this country. So we've got a category for sacrificing ourselves for a greater cause. We resonate with that. Do we resonate with it when we are being called on to sacrifice? The career aspirations we had, the financial stability that we would have had, etc. That's going to take some work, but it's essential to leading home group evangelism. It won't happen without people giving their life over to God, and that area is a huge, huge challenge in this culture particularly. We also need to be willing to give feedback to the Christians on the mission's progress, good or bad. You know, every home group leader knows they can't do it by themselves. We can't grow this group by ourselves. It's going to take all of us in this. Yet a lot of home group leaders are afraid to let their group know they're not doing very well. Afraid of rebellion, afraid of it sounding legalistic, ticking people off. You know what? Probably will tick some off. And so oftentimes, when we confront a home group that's not doing well in evangelism, we will ask in a consultation, so you apparently are aware then that you guys are really hurting here. Yeah, we're hurting. We know. You know, usually you don't have to tell them. They're telling you and asking you things. So the next question out of our mouth is inevitably, do the people in your group know? Well, I mean, you know, no. Oh, so you can grow this group all by yourself. Well, no. Okay, they don't know you're doing poorly, but somehow they're going to figure this out on their own. And so critical for leadership, leading evangelism, is to confront the group with the news. Hopefully good, but it not always is. How do you do that? Well, one way, again, remember, you're not in front of your non-believers at this point. You're in front of your Christians only. You may bring in your home group chart. We have a database, and these represent old members, members that were in the group before it planted. These are first-time guests. These are first-time guests that come back, returning new. The only way a home group grows is people coming back. And, you know, so if you're sitting here starting out about near 35 and you've lost 10 and a half a year, you should be sweating some bullets. This should be disturbing. That's not home group growth. That doesn't reflect Ephesians 4:16 and other passages. So what do you do? Well, a good leader is going to, first of all, look a little bit more closely and say, well, part of the problem here is we're very inconsistent. You know, we got like 30, whatever it was, 25, 30 believers, and we're seeing almost no first-timers. And remember, this is spread out over 2 to 4 meetings in a month. And we've got multiple months with none at all. You know, it's time to talk to the group about this and ask them, what do they think? And the way we usually do that is we put that in front of them and say, how do you think we're doing? You don't have to wag a finger. Usually they're astute. They're adults. They sit there and go, looks like we, you know, they may use the S word. We suck, you know. And you sit there and go, yeah. And you let them come to that conclusion. So you talk to them. Oh, look what happened to this real-life group after that discussion. It simply was brought to their attention. You let the Lord move people individually. I mean, there's probably a myriad of reasons that maybe, you know, the distractions, they hadn't been praying enough and things. I mean, who knows? But things began to change. All we do is draw people's attention to God's goal for the group. And when they're sitting there going, yes, yes, I agree. How do you think we're doing? Oh, boy, there's a gap between the goal, the vision God has for us, and where we're actually at. See, however big that gap is, creates tension in people. If they own that gap, you don't have to wag a finger and chastise people. And what that did to the group as a whole was that. And they had to plant. Now, when you do bring this to the attention of a group, and you must for consensus, in the same way these leaders continued to say, this is phenomenal, look what's going on, man, look at the outreach. God is really moving. It looks like we've repented and we are back in the field kicking up a dust cloud of harvest. This is awesome. So you get feedback both ways when this is happening. But to protect ourselves from being legalistic when we do approach a group with something like this, or an individual, you're talking to somebody you're helping disciple, you want to be very humble about admitting where you fall short, particularly in the issues you're talking to. I don't think anybody can stand there and say, well, I don't have anything to be, you know, contrite about. I'm the perfect evangelist. Oh, of course not. I chicken out. I don't invest. I get distracted. Let's be humble. Let's draw people's attention to God's perspective, not ours, not our churches. When I hear people say, I know, outreach is important to Xenos. Who cares what's important to Xenos? What's important is what's important to God. Make sure we're teaching His perspective on these things. And we always want to remind people of the proper motives for doing outreach. And I don't think there's multiple biblical motives, but no greater one than gratitude for what He's done for us. And we must draw their attention to that in the context even of admonition about how the group is doing. So a few things to remember. Consensus isn't automatic. It has considerable inertia. Considerable inertia. The tendency of an object to remain still unless disturbed by an external force. In this case, force is too strong of a word, but that's the definition. Things that disturb that inertia and get it rolling is prayer, prayer, and prayer. I like the way one of our elders worded it on our servant team retreat or deacon retreat. It's a rebellion against the status quo. God, change me. God, change the situation. Christian-only e-groups with everybody contributing. You should see our e-group of our home group. We don't allow any non-Christian on it. We don't allow any Christian that doesn't know what this group is about, because probably they will be the topic on more than one email. So we want to make sure they own what God is doing in our midst. And our wires just sing with, you know, I need some prayer because we're going out with so-and-so this weekend. And then on Monday, you know, hey, it went fantastic. Thanks for the prayers. We had this kind of conversation. And, you know, usually we've got a dozen or more of those conversations every week going on in our e-group. Very little announcing I'm selling my car. Does anybody want to buy it? Kind of. So I think it's a godly use of e-groups. Discipleship is where most of this work gets done, as we've already said. And workers' meetings, where we just kind of, we may have special meetings where we draw people's attention to the health of the group, the direction, etc. And consensus is ultimately developed by God. This is a man-centered workshop. I admit it. It's about us leading evangelism. But don't think, you know, I'm a naturalist, or that we are. We know God causes the growth. We don't. We know He draws people to Him. He's there way before we are with the lost. And He is the one who empowers us to do this work. So, I mean, I'd love to spend a lot of time on the importance of our personal prayer and time in the Word and things of that nature where we are empowered, etc. That's just not what this workshop's about. So, okay, now people are convinced, yes, this is what it's about. Where to from here to lead evangelism? Well, home group workers, and I've already tipped my hat to this, must be committed to building relationships with Christians, discipling, and non-Christians, evangelism, outside of the meeting structures. This is critical. Getting out of themselves. When a home group has been stuck in the mud for a while, we very quickly begin to ask, are people consistently investing in non-believers in their personal time? You know, my personal times are, you know, practically the whole weekend except for family time. Monday night, I have nothing. Every other Tuesday, I have nothing. Fridays, I have nothing. I've got all sorts of time to do my woodworking, gardening, running, shooting, training my bird dog, and everything else. Am I getting out with the lost? That is essential. Personal investment. Building friendships. So, you know, a guy that the Lord blessed me with bringing into my life, a patient. I'm a physical therapist and athletic trainer originally. Shifted gears in the early 90s. This guy was an elite runner for Ireland, but he was taking his getting his PhD at OSU. Came in to be treated, and, you know, so a relationship started. So to reach out to him, I sacrificially ran with him. And you think, but you like to run. What sacrifice is that? I don't run 5-minute miles for 10 miles. I don't run a 2:23 marathon the first time I ever run a marathon. And this guy does. So we'd run together for, I'd stay with him for 2 miles, make sure he asked questions I could just nod to, you know. And about a year and a half later, he came to Christ. Many people were part of that. But I'd been getting together with that guy, even since getting him healed, weekly and more. You know, I mean, I was married. You know, I had a life beyond just that, and I was leading a home group and teaching more than most people, et cetera, et cetera. But this was critical. And when he came to Christ, I began to disciple him. Naturally, in about 2 weeks, he exceeded me, and he began to disciple me. But we got together weekly till the year 2000. 1986, he became a Christian, and we continued to get together weekly in discipling or iron sharpening iron relationship, really, you know, for that many years. We co-led for a while, and then we planted him off. He's now back in Ireland. That's what it looks like. How God used me in this guy's life, I don't know. He has led so many more people to Christ than I have. He's a phenomenal guy. That's a picture of it. So are we investing in people, or do our people suffer from a meeting mentality? I show up to the meetings. That's good. I've checked it off. I'm at home group. I'm at my big church service, whatever it is. I'll attend the occasional outreach party. I've done my duty. I don't think that is our duty. That's where we get fed. That's where the mystical witness of the body, if we can bring somebody in contact with the body, happens. But that's not where the essence of God's love is shown. It is shown in investment and building relationships. So what's the personal investment look like? What do you do for fun? What do you do with friends? What kind of hanging out do you do, from sports to everything else? It looks like that. And I strongly encourage, you can't go to Gary's workshop, Gary DeLashmit's on Go Groups, because he's doing it right now, and I really would rather you not leave. But there's a tape, or a CD, I mean, on it. I strongly encourage hearing that. It has been a wonderful impetus to getting people to see it's more important to go and be Christians among non-Christians than to constantly invite them to come and see. And I won't go into it further because I don't have time, but that's the point, is that kind of personal investment. So how do you make a Christian invest regularly in the lost or the younger Christian? You can't. I put that in your notes because I thought if I didn't write in the you can't and somebody else saw that, I'd get hung for being manipulative or something. You know, they need to decide before God that they want his agenda before their own. But we do have a role in bringing it to their attention. Oftentimes teaching through teaching and discipling, things like time stewardship. People want to do it, but they don't know how to integrate it. Taking them through discussions about values transformation and things of that nature is the kind of thing the Spirit comes right alongside and helps them capture God's vision. Home group leaders also need to equip their members to do evangelism. You know, it's one thing to convince somebody to do it, and it's another thing for them to actually take those kind of steps, even if they're there, okay, I will carve out time to do it. And again, that's one key part of the equipment. I wanted to bring it back up because we do look at that as an essential part. A lot of people don't know how to take their 24/7 week and go, now how do I add this to it? Well, you don't add it to it. You learn how to steward your time as God would have you, and we need to help them with that. But also, we need to build an ethos, an ethic in the person to pursue their own growth as an evangelist. If they have weaknesses in defense of the faith, in apologetics, you know, boy, I keep running into these discussions about creationism, then you need to read. Do we offer courses? So we have coursework here that we offer church-wide, that the materials can be adapted and used in the home group for, you know, in a workers' meeting. That can be taken into a discipling relationship, and that's what you do for a couple of months, is go through that material. Are people reading books? You know, we have really been impacted. Jim really pounded this last night. Invading Secular Space by Smith and Robinson has just been phenomenal. Phenomenal about the necessity of getting out there, invading secular space. I'm eager to hear his workshop tomorrow. So, but I think that this needs to be part of our ethos in home group, is continual advancement. Jill Briscoe talked about tenacity as an essential part, an art of spiritual leadership, tenacity. We need to have it, and we need to impart it as well to continue pursue growth. Now, one qualification, I'm not saying, you know, we don't witness until equipped. Andrew wasn't equipped when he got up. But I am saying that there is a relationship between our knowledge of God's Word, our own spiritual vitality, and our effectiveness in His work. Workers handling effectively the Word of God. And so it's not either or. I believe a Christian is qualified the moment they receive Christ to be an evangelist. But as they become more Christ-like and as they become more equipped in God's Word and truth, they will become more effective. So this needs to be part of our home group work. Home group leaders must lead evangelism by doing evangelism. If they said you're only allowed to do one, this would be it. Because when we're doing it, we're working through all that other stuff. Boy, it's a lot easier to impart when it's our own lifestyle. So in Mark Middleburg's book, he's Building a Contagious Church, he says, how important is this owning and modeling of evangelistic values by church leaders? It's everything. Unless you first catch God's concern for those outside his family, you may as well ignore the rest of the ideas in his book. Why? Because without a heart that beats fast for the lost, you won't have the foundation or spiritual resources needed to sustain evangelistic programs and ministry. But if we grow bigger and bigger hearts for those who don't know Christ, and if we increasingly model his bold example of being a friend of sinners out there, not inviting them, getting out there, then those around us will take their cues from us. They too will begin to take strategic relational risks for the sake of the gospel. We have got to be in the field. There is no moral authority in a leader who presses his church or her church for evangelism and is not doing it in their own life.
Well, I don't know how to work it in. Well, you're just going to have to figure that out. You haven't figured it out. You need to be bold in your witness. Well, what would that sound like? Well, let's see here. When's the last time I witnessed? Or to somehow say, well, my witnessing is to the people that other people bring around. That's it. That's my evangelistic ministry. What kind of a lifestyle is that? I don't want to lead the person that Matt brought to home group to Christ. I want him to. And so we must grasp this ourselves. We need to be so above reproach in this. So we ask ourselves, what non-Christian friends, co-workers, teammates, family do we regularly get together with, knowing we are there to be God's spokesperson if he wishes, and certainly to show his love? Are we witnessing, verbally communicating the gospel message? Side note here, paid staff should do all of this on their own personal time, not counting toward work hours. That's evangelism and discipleship. You know, we don't do home group work on work time. I don't prepare home group teachings. Well, I may do it in my office because it's just easier. I'll be home late tonight and I'll just stay there and study. I'm booted up. But it's not part of my work hours or discipling those guys or getting out with non-believers. See, we're asking everybody in the church with whatever careers and life they've got, you've got to figure out a way to incorporate God's heart into your life. We've got to do that too if we're paid staff. And we kind of carry that into our home group consultants, not quite relevant here, but all of our home group consultants, our home group leaders who have and model evangelism in their own personal life, discipleship, and have planted at least one or two home groups, because that's what they're trying to help other home group leaders do. Another key part of leading evangelism is giving a vision for the end point. We need to plan for planting the group from the very beginning. We try to encourage leaders to have a plant plan, which certainly can change. God's very dynamic. It's kind of a shot from the hip, but at least you're beginning to think about it. Within 6 to 9 months of planting, we planted in November, and we don't really have a very defined thought on which way to plant at this point. I'm kind of anxious about that. I don't like that. And so we've brought it to the attention of the group that we're talking about this in leaders' meetings, asking for their prayers and ideas. I want everybody thinking about this. It's very important because it prepares workers, if we do this early, emotionally and relationally, for the changes that occur at the plant. I planted Donal off in January of 2000. That wasn't easy. We worked well together, but he needed to be out there on his own and away from Papa Patch, you know. College nickname I picked up. It's stressful to realize I'm not going to be getting together with this person in home group. Now, we still see him at Central Teaching, et cetera. It's not like we're moving to other towns, but it is different when you're not in that work together. So this gets people preparing for that. It's also a constant reminder of the purpose of the group, to reach the lost and disciple the Christians. And so we continually talk about it with all the Christians. So they realize, yes, that's what this group is about. And it enables discernment on what the group lacks right now and needs in order to grow and plant. I can tell you who our best workers are in our home group right now today that aren't leaders. And none of them are ready to leave. But I do know who's not only potentially, but right now is doing the best work. And so for us to think about planting, it kind of makes me think about, okay, for this person to be planted off from leaders as a leader, first of all, they got to work on their motives a little bit. They're a little too sensitive to rejection and to critique. This enables us to begin to see what work do we need to do before we can actually plant the group. And then after the plant, things like this are seen. This is, again, an actual group trying to get a plant plan set. They went out and
That's May was their first month of '04. Trying to get a plant plan set up within that period of time. The group planted in November. Why does that say 12? I don't know. In November. Now, this are the two separate groups since then. Now, never did they have, I mean, they got up near 40, and since then, they've been up at near 50 almost every month. That's the effect of planting. You know, if we just stuck in that person's basement, where would it be? I guarantee it would be down around here. We would have dipped back down. Because you just can't sustain that. You've got to let people go to do the Lord's work. And so that brings back up our ministry chart. That's kind of how we begin to sketch out what a plant looks like along normal relational lines. So that was one group, and then you sit there and you put an arm around people and let's move them up to leadership, and let's do the same thing with Scott and Cowdy. And so we've got plural leadership whenever possible. We got a lot of people doing witnessing on both sides. Looks like there's enough solid, you know, walking Christians there. Okay, let's plant. Let's set a date and go. Let's have a harvest meeting, celebrate what the Lord has done here, and get back out in the field. And show up with half the number of people next week and go, I'm a little nervous. I think I'll have to speak up now. And that's what we see, people stepping up to the plate. You have kind of a list there of ideas to help the group develop this mindset. And really, it's the whole consensus kind of thing, not just planting, but I put it here. I'm not going to go through those individually, but if you have questions about them when we're done, feel free to ask. Home group evangelism ministry requires a well-thought-out plan. And I left it in the notes because, I mean, we know it, but it's essential. If there's no tangible goal being set, communicated, and acted upon, then no goal will be met. And so setting a plant plan is one of those key goals. Home group leaders must stay forward thinking and moving, even when pressed with legitimate distractions from the main mission. And I mean legitimate, you know, I mean things that need to be attended to. It's part and parcel to home group work. Some groups don't grow because their leaders can't do this. When things happen in the group in any of these areas, it locks them up. And man, we've got to cure this problem. I mean, we've got serious problems in our home group. We've got things. They're profound. I mean, they're life changing for the people involved that we're investing with while we're doing outreach. We're not stopping God's work in that area to attend to this. Think of what Galatians 5:16 says. Of course, it's applying just to the individual Christian. It says, if you do not carry out the desire of the flesh, then you will walk in the Spirit. Not what it says. It says, if you walk in the Spirit, you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. So the prescription for somebody's sin life isn't stop doing that. The prescription for their sin life, Paul's pointing out there and in Romans 8, is what? You need to learn to walk in the Spirit. That's going to melt away. So you expand that corporately to a home group. When we lead, we need to think in terms of helping people walk. That's how the group will grow in its own expression of God's love as well as in their ministry lifestyle. That's the focus. Now, if I as a leader instead revert and I focus on these, oh boy, I'll tell you, they're shacking up and they're not married, which makes that a problem. Okay, stop all the wheels. We got a 2 hours leader meeting. We got to talk about how to get this taken care of. Oh, what a waste of precious time. That does need to be taken care of. But not at that kind of expense. So counseling issues come up. Couples in marriage conflict, group members in conflict with one another,
parenting problems with adolescent children, dating issues in the group, premarital counseling to do, weddings, funerals. See, here at Xenos, our home group leaders do all that. You know, we don't have like a pastoral staff that does weddings. I've been doing weddings since 1987, when I was a full-time physical therapist. We've got probably 400 ordained people in this church doing it on the home group level, because those are the people we're tied in with. And naturally, the elders and that do too for the people in the home group they lead. Tragedies when somebody loses somebody, loses a job, problems, you know, with the house, etc. Issues come up. Sin issues. We sin multiple times daily. Sometimes they're so serious. It needs to be attended to right now. Sometimes they're so serious it can require formal church discipline. We live out the passages on formal church discipline here. We do excommunicate for factious behavior and for sexual immorality, unrepentant, and obviously. It does occasionally get to that point. Yeah, that takes a lot of time in a leader's life. They got to get counsel from staff to do that kind of stuff. Nobody can just fly off the handle on that. And it's tiring and it's emotionally draining. Dissent from members of the group. You know, you're trying to do everything you can. You got the person there, the group doesn't love me the way they're supposed to. And you got the person sitting there going, I don't like this evangelism focus. Can we meet a half hour later? Can we meet a half hour earlier? Can we have a party without kids? Can we have a party with more kids? And it's just like, oh boy. A lot of distractions. And again, as God's shepherds, we must care for and serve those needs. We must draw them to His perspective and His love. I think the Lord would scream loudly if we waved His commission flag and ignored those things. I think He'd rip the lampstand right out from under our feet. I think He'd scream just as loudly as if we somehow defined home church work as ministering to those needs, as if we are nothing but a support group so our lives are more together. He wants our lives to come together so we can be a beacon to the lost. The point of helping one another is so that that person and myself is more effective in God's mission. It's not an end unto itself. Guidelines to help stay on track. Well, one is what we already talked about, teaching God's heart for the lost and purpose of the church. Let's trust the power of the Holy Spirit when we teach the Word of God. Willing to please God, even if it results in displeasing man. A transactional leader is somebody who says, you know, if I do that, I think I'm going to really tick people off, so I'm not going to do it. Please God, please man. What does Paul say in Galatians 1? Boy, I sure wish I could please God and please you, but you know what? You guys aren't on God's side on this, so I really don't care if I tick you off. I wish I didn't, but that's not my fault. It's yours. Caleb, we are going to take this territory whether you follow or not. I'm doing God's purpose for Israel. And they shouted loudly against me. Well, I've got to follow my God. As a leader, we will often be put in the place, particularly with the mission, with people who sit there and say, I've heard enough about this evangelism stuff, etc. No, we haven't heard enough. This is what God is doing through the church until He returns. And so we need to have the strength to do that. We need to continue outreach events no matter what else is going on. Although personal investment is the core to evangelism, I think it's important for a home group to come together and do things like outreach parties, planned or spontaneous, various kinds of outings. We have a lot of ministries. By the way, a great workshop on those kind of things is tomorrow at 2 o'clock, Evangelism Initiative. Sherry Fohas is doing that, and she's a guruess in this area. And she's going to be talking about things that are very critical tools in the tool belt of the home church. we need to be intentional and consistent in talking about outreach among our group members. The emails, for instance, you know, I try to get on there every week just sharing something, not lecturing, sharing. This during discipleship times, regularly bringing up, how's it going with that guy you're golfing with in that golf league? You know, pretty good. We had this discussion this week. I need some advice on, you know, where to go from here, etc. And again, in the Christian-only meetings. Leaders' meeting agendas should be focused on outreach, on following up the people that have come around, and on discipleship and plant planting. I know a lot of leaders, you know, they've got all these things that are creating so much tension, problems. Let's solve these things. I hate these feelings, you know. We've got 10 minutes at the end, we'll talk about it. We've got the lost coming. We've got to talk about them. We've got young Christians that are starting to get excited. We need to see how to help them. We encourage leaders, order their agendas according to God's priorities. Save time at the end to talk about key issues, problem issues, but stay focused on the mission. And so we do attend to those things, but I'd rather attend to them on the phone, face-to-face, outside of that meeting. Train leaders to do basic biblical counseling. Things are going to happen. We counsel in the context of our discipling relationships 90% of the time. We don't have a huge pastoral counseling staff because of that. Train leaders to manage conflict. It's going to happen. So might as well have them prepared. And then finally, I think to lead evangelism, we in a home group context, our structures must put non-Christians at ease. And so now think of your home group structures. Again, this is if your home group, if you hope outreach comes there. Is the structure, the atmosphere, the teaching or discussion, the content, more tuned to edifying the believer or to putting the non-believer at ease? And we really can expand that to our corporate meeting as well if we intend for outreach to happen there. Stop and think of what we're doing when we're inviting a non-Christian to a home group. You're inviting somebody to your home, or somebody's inviting them to your home if it's in your house. They probably don't know the owner. They're going to a house of somebody they don't know. They're going to sit around and hear something taught that they don't believe in. And they're sitting amongst 30 people or whatever whom they don't know. This is a huge stretch to get somebody there. Typically, at best, in post-college groups, we see only 1 out of 4 people continue to come back. That we consider pretty darn good, because there's an awful lot of dynamics going on, including spiritual ones, that make that tough. So that means we get 4 first-timers to come. We grew by 1. What are we doing with our structures to at least eliminate things that we can control and God gives us the freedom to do with as we wish? So this is already a stretch. Let's not make it tougher by introducing Christian-only practices that God says, you don't have to do that there. You can do that someplace else. That can alienate that person. Here's some structural considerations. A great fellowship environment, good food, or a good atmosphere. We'll get to the food in a second. I'm a little hungry. Good non-Christian music playing in the background, something that associates with the demographic of who you're reaching out to. Deck furniture, lights, a fire ring for the fellowship afterward. Get somebody that's gifted in hospitality to be your go-to person and tell you what to do. We host a home group at our house, and we have people that are much more tuned into that kind of thing than we are, so they tell us what to do. You need more chairs. Okay, we go out and buy more chairs. You need to set it up this way so people are feel more comfortable. Okay, we do that. That kind of atmosphere is important. Great snacks and beverages. Man, I'll get on our group if all of a sudden I see bags of potato chips and nothing else. It's like, hey, guys, whoa, 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 whoa. What happened to the veggie trays, the baking, and things like that? Why? Because we want people to hang out afterward. It's not teaching focused. It's relationship focused. The teaching is God putting his best foot forward, but then it's the relationships that come from that. It's what happens the next couple hours. Keep the temperature comfortable. You should see our basement. Now, I can freeze that basement. You'll sit in that chair, and you'd stick to the chair if you tried to get up, and 15 minutes later, you're sitting there going, boy, it's starting to get a little warm in here. I got that tuned down so far, and I freeze that basement, but 30 people down there, it starts to warm up. And that drives me crazy, because I'm a conservationist. And I hate the thought of me sitting here at work and my wife teaching right below this room, and that house is being frozen and nobody's in it for 10 hours till we get home. Why can't I just turn it on when I get there? Because the house will be too warm if I try to, you know, AC it then. So I spend the extra money. I've got my problems. I've got a higher AC bill. They've got their problems. They're going to hell. I will just pay the extra money. Comfortable temperature. I've had the AC on in the middle of winter. That chart was our chart. When we were up into the 40s, it got hot down there, and I would have to cool the basement. People go, is that the AC going? I'm like, yeah, it's gone. Aren't you hot? No Christianese during the teaching, sharing, and prayer. Regularly remind people, you know, sanctification. I know what that means, and you know what that means. Why remind the non-believer that they don't have the faintest idea what you're talking about and they don't belong there? Because that kind of language reminds them they don't belong there. Fellowship, where Christians are all committed to staying after the meeting to meet people. The amen is not said and people start shuffling out the door. The work is just beginning. This is the great part of the night, the next couple of hours, to meet people. And associated with that other-centered fellowship with guests. You know, I get together with guys during the week. I play sports with them and I do various things like that. I don't need to talk with those guys during the meeting. I want to talk with the person I don't know. It's also a safe time to talk to the opposite sex. So I'll go and chat with the wife of so-and-so. I mean, I'm in a corporate setting. So, you know, showing God's love to people that you don't know well. It's about them, not us. We don't clean up till after the guests are gone. What does starting to stack chairs mean? Go home. You know, boy, we always have somebody super efficient, you know, and all of a sudden it's means stack. Now, welcome. Well, we just want to help you at your house. Thank you. Stay till 10, 10:30, and then help. Well, I'm not going to be here that late. Well, then we'll take care of it. I don't want to usher anybody out. Tailor your logistics to the field where possible. What time do you start? How often do you meet? Are you going to have babysitting or not? We don't. We have just seen too many times where, you know, kids running around the moment the amen said kills fellowship. I mean, they can stay for 2 hours. But, you know, it's wild. And so we don't do that. Now, we do allow babies who are being nursed to be there. We meet in our basement. We have a finished basement. And the moms stay up on the first floor, and we reverse the baby monitor so they can hear the teaching. And we just tell them, you know, whenever you're comfortable getting a babysitter, then. Well, when? Then. We're not worried about it. And then we kick the father out to take care of the baby so the mother can enjoy adult company. So you need to tailor logistics to the field where possible. You know, most aspects of home group structure are a matter of taste, not biblical mandate. Singing, it's not mandated. Not in that setting, certainly. So we don't. We used to. I remember sitting down, and we were about ready to get singing. I was going to teach, and we were going to sing, and it was kind of an experiment. I looked, and we had 9 first-time guests. And I thought, having them already, all these strange things. This was back in the 80s, and we were trying different things. So we didn't. Boy, did I take some heat for that. But
We had 9 guests that didn't feel uncomfortable because they were being asked to sing songs that they didn't believe in. So, all right, that's all I've got. And we do have a little bit of time for question and answer. Success of sorts.
Does that give
any more handouts? There should have been 50. Do we have 50 people? Woody? There will be downstairs because I gave... Thank you very much. You bet. Yeah.
We up in Northeast Ohio, we've been contemplating moving well, I think we've been amazing since we move our TC Saturday night, and we've been having home church meetings on every other Friday night. And now we're thinking, oh, maybe we need to move our home church meetings to a weeknight. So I'm just wondering how that's gonna work as far as outreach goes for the home church. And if we're actually going to be able to, draw in families, people with families. I mean, how it might work during the summer, but during the school day, school year.
You every other week for home group? Are you every other week for home group?
Yeah.
We've never met on a Friday, on a weekend night for home group. And I've been in here since 83. We now meet on Tuesdays, and when we shifted the CT from... to Sunday night, we moved our home group from Monday to Tuesday night just to put a little bit of a gap in there. But there's a lot of Friday groups, but, we have not had a problem with outreach that has been because of the night that it is.
Right.
Yep.
On a school night?
Yep. And that's one reason we start early. I mean, when we say 7:30, it's would you pray? And it's 7:30. We're not on Xenos time in our home group because, I want people to sit there and go, I can do this. I can be home, for the non-believer, the very new person. Of course, I'd love them to hang out for 2 hours, but if they sit there and go, I'll stay to the amen, but then I'm out of here. Great. I'll take it. I mean, the fact of the matter is the person that brought them is the one that's going to be doing the work out there anyways. It has been doable. Yeah.
Up until this point, probably a couple of years ago, we met every week. So on a weeknight, and when our kids were little, we alternate, but then 1 week a month, everyone tried to get babies to every week. But it worked. I mean, it was really hard to go to every other week. Because if you miss one,
No, there is no rule.
It's what,
that's the pattern. Yeah, that has been the pattern. Now, I know a group that's had a lot of outreach into the Asian community. Well, they will not separate from their children, and they're doing something that is working. I just found out last week that their way of using upstairs, downstairs, and whatever they're doing, I didn't get any details. I didn't have time. It's one of the groups I oversee, but they're having some success. I don't want to sound trite because I hear what you're saying, but it apparently is a God thing that because of the work that's being done out there, usually nobody's being invited to something until they're already demonstrating some interest. So they may alternate for a little bit. Well, my husband's going to go or my wife's going to go if it's a couple. But typically, very shortly, they're sitting there saying, I'll get a babysitter for that, 2 hours. And we pray like bandits about babysitting. Supernatural God works in the natural world, and I really believe that, both in shaking good babysitters out of the trees as well as keeping them from falling through. And, it's a definitely a logistic variable, but it has worked. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Great structure. Creative. Yeah.
My college group, a while we were hurting, we hadn't brought around a guy for a long time. We set up goals of how many, you know, times a week each person would pray for opportunities to meet new believers, and then set up, you know, a 6 month goal of how many times we'd always share the gospel. And, you know, God was, he was pretty amazing. He brought like 12 salvations. What was interesting was that we set a goal bringing like 60 guys into a cell group by the end of June, and we hit that goal probably about the 1st of June, and we were keeping track. Like each Friday night we'd come back and say, well, you know, has everyone met their, you know, prayer goal or any new salvations? And like the week after we hit that goal, like no one had, you know, made their prayer goals. And it was interesting, one of the guys was reading the Old Testament, he was like, this is just like Israel, as soon as we were doing well, we kind of fell off the bandwagon and, you know, weren't turning to God. And so your point when you were saying, like, you know, prayer was so key, because we didn't even come anywhere close to hitting our mark on how many times we wanted to share the gospel, and we're only, like, mildly, you know, consistent with their prayer goals, but anyways, it was really prayer that, that brought the people around.
Yeah, and I think that's the principle. And I think that you can establish those kind of goals with college ministry easier than you can with adults. And there's good reasons for it. It's not a slam to either sect, but there is a difference. But that is the essence. You listen to these groups that plant, and what they're talking about is when we got serious about prayer, that everything changed. Well, we recently had the parents of one of our leaders start coming to our group, and I'm still trying to figure a way to get them out of the group. Yeah. You still here, Woody? Yeah, okay. That was a, there's the dad. You know, it would only be, I think, if they allowed that. You know, if they felt out of place. I'm kind of like cross-generational. I feel just as comfortable down there with college students as I do with anybody else. And so I think it has more to do with the sensitivity of the person. We do have groups whose demographics are more empty nesters. So we see less of an age issue and more of a, kind of a life situation issue. And, but, you know, Woody and Brenda are incredibly involved, invested. They love study, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, you know, we're kind of, you know, age blind in that regard. So I would keep that as, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be very comfortable. On the flip side of that, you know, so many more people come to Christ between 20 and 35 years old than after 35. So where my own personal ministry is concerned in evangelism, if I have only X, I only do have X amount of time, whatever that is. If I have multiple options, I'm going to go for a younger person because I think there is a better chance of them coming to Christ. It's got nothing to do with affinity or anything like that. It's just I've only got so much time and salvations are that. Great. I wonder in those cases, we see that in post-college ministry probably more because we don't have the kind of growth you all do. And I begin to inquire, how much are you talking and praying about this during discipleship? Because I think a workers' meeting or something where the whole group comes together and says, wow, we've got a problem, is a great jump start, even a necessary jump start. But, you know, to keep the car running so the battery charges is necessary too. And the car running means invested relationships. And so I'm inevitably asking everybody in discipling relationships to, within 2 weeks of that meeting, please make sure you ask one another, how are you doing in your personal evangelism? What is happening? Well, I have to admit, I've gotten pretty selfish. I got consumed with my house project, et cetera, you know. And again, we don't want to wag fingers, but, you know, letting the person look at their own life. But it's the follow-up of that meeting and that moment in the context of a grace-based relationship, I think, is where it gets sustained or not. Last one. Yeah. Yes and yes. Definitely not with non-believer. Not when non-believers are there. Our e-group is a huge one, and there again, seldom do we sit there and do admonition via the e-group. It's more just stories. So, you know, I went home after CT a couple of weeks ago, and I had every intention of finishing study. Let my dog out. The neighbors were back there. I've been trying to. Kind of like wish we'd get invited to their parties, you know, and he's bald, I'm bald, his name's Doug, my name's Doug, why haven't I been invited? I found out. I was talking with one of the other neighbors that were at the party, he works for the DEA, we're chatting, he goes, hey, you want a beer? And I'm there, sure. And so I had the beer, Doug comes out of the house, he goes, you're drinking a beer. And I'm there, so are you. So, you know, we got into a spiritual discussion. And we got invited to the next party where we had direct witnessing with multiple people. And I won the cornhole game, of course. And so I was on the e-group that night telling the group, oh, man, this was awesome. You know, it broke so many barriers just in that one moment, and I see this happening. So now that reminds the group of the mission. My buddy, one of the guys I'm investing with, you know, he's an attorney. He has that discussion at a poker party this week. And he's out on the e-group. He took the names out of it. But we have only workers on our e-group. We have somebody administrate it who, if they're uncertain, they'll ask one of the leaders, but they've got good judgment. E-group, discipleship time, workers' meetings once a quarter or so for us. We'll bring everybody together, and usually it's just very positive things to talk about. And if there is a negative, we try to keep it sandwiched among the many positives. That's where it happens. But you're right. It can't be. Now, a person's going to feel like a project if the person reaching out to them doesn't love the lost. If somehow they're convinced this is the right thing, but motives are good, but not their motives are good, but it doesn't also include, man, I care for the lost. I have compassion for those that don't know Christ, then I think sometimes that feeling of I'm a project can leak out. But that's a sanctification issue and one that they'll probably learn the hard way, too. Prayer meeting. Yes, and our prayer meeting is before our home group meeting. As a post-college group, I don't want to keep bringing people out. I want them to use their nights to reach out. So we get our prayer meeting started 45 minutes before our home group meeting. And we kind of split forces, some to stay downstairs to fellowship with people as they come in, and some are upstairs praying. And that's where, I mean, and that's very focused, thank you very much, Adam, on the lost.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted, but you may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.